What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd here, flying solo for the first hour of the show. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. Coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. No Drance on the show today. Of course, he was on the final couple of legs of this Canucks road trip. He was at the game in Chicago last night, so he's taking a leisurely travel day home to Vancouver for Drance today. So no Drance today, but lots of great stuff coming up here. Jason Buchla, our Wednesday regular, he's going to join me at 12:30, a little bit earlier than usual. And then at 1, from 1 to 2, just like we did on Friday, Landon Ferraro is going to come in studio, join me, co-host for the final hour of the show. And that was awesome with Landon on Friday, so I'm really looking forward to that coming up at 1 o'clock as well. Of course, we usually do the crossover on Wednesdays, in the first segment on Wednesdays, but we're going to push that a day until Drance is back so we can have the full crossover experience with Drance and Dhaliwal going at it. We'll do that tomorrow on the show. So we'll still get our crossover fill here on the show this week, but it's going to happen Thursday instead of Wednesday. As always, when it's just one of us, we need your texts more than ever. Really rely on your texts on these solo shows. So hit me up. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. If you've got questions for Landon later, if you've got questions for Jason Buchla, if you've got questions, thoughts for me, whatever it is, hit us up. 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Again, Jason Buchla at 12:30, Landon Ferraro at 1. Before we talk about any of that, let's go right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, October 23rd, starting with the headlines. Danton Heinen scored a couple of goals in the first period. The Canucks take care of the Blackhawks 6-3 in Chicago. That's three wins in a row to finish off this four-game road trip. And all of a sudden, the Canucks right back at a 667 points percentage after their early mini skid. I think it was Canucks Army's David Quadrelli who said on Twitter that that's actually an identical points percentage to what they had last year. They're on pace for 109 points. So any slow start concerns, right, with the first three winless games, those are completely out the window. They've righted the ship. Lots to talk to you about in terms of process. We'll get into that. But from purely a results standpoint, they have more than taken care of business now through their first six games. Again, taking 8 points from those first six games. So that's a big deal, right? Stringing a few wins together. I don't know if it was quite the same type of professional performance that Rick Tocchet spoke about before the game. He had some concerns about still what they're giving up in the guts of the ice. Again, we'll get more into that as the whiteboard continues. But certainly, anyone watching that game, there's no question whatsoever about who the significantly better team is. Yeah, Chicago did some things. Maybe they're better than last year, right? Vancouver had some sloppy plays. Maybe let Chicago hang around a little bit. But it was certainly a professional performance in the sense that last game of a road trip, and again, we left with no doubt at the end of the night, who the better team is as the Canucks win 6-3 in Chicago. So rather than go through some of the individual performances right off the bat, I mentioned Danton Heinen. You know, I thought Filip Hronek had his best game of the season last night. I want to kind of just take a pause at the six-game mark of the schedule here and focus in on the Canucks' identity. It's been a big buzzword, and I think it's more than a buzzword, right? Identity often is just kind of an easy buzzword to throw around, right? Oh, good teams have an identity, bad teams don't. And oftentimes, I think what we're doing is we're kind of after the fact trying to map on an identity to what we've seen in the team do, right? It's not so much something that you can predict, but if a team wins, then all of a sudden you have to come up with an explanation for what their identity is. But last year, we saw the Canucks forge a really, really solid identity. And it was one that was very tangible, right? It wasn't just, oh, they work hard. It was they play a very specific way. They value certain things. They're going to act a certain way on the ice. They have very specific goals, and that's what allows them to be successful. And as we all know, this year, coming into the season, we've heard from the players, certainly from the coach. We've all analyzed it. They're trying to build a new identity, not to completely throw the old one out. The old one built on, you know, an work ethic, defensive reliability, being very cautious and very careful with the puck, having great goaltending, having star players. Yes, they're not trying to throw that one out, but they're trying to build new elements of their identity on top of that. Now, we're only 6 games in, right? So we got a long way to go as we evaluate this. And as Drance has pointed out a bunch, game 6 last year was really the first time we saw that identity in full for the Canucks. It was a game against Nashville, similar position, actually, final game of a road trip. So there's a long way to go before we're really going to have a handle on have the Canucks built this new identity. We could see some personnel changes. I fully expect to see some personnel changes, certainly at the deadline, but probably in the months leading up to the deadline as well. That's going to have a big impact on how we talk about this team, how we think about their identity. But I just want to run through some of the things that I think we're seeing them successfully incorporate, or what are parts, good parts of their identity, and some of the areas where they still have some room to grow. So number one, in terms of something where we are seeing the vision come to fruition, right? From the moves they made in the summer, the emphasis in training camp, and now the results on the ice, is the forward depth. This was a big talking point coming into the season. Again, you're already starting to see the playoff. You look at the goals that the third line scored last night, Dan Heinen putting in a couple, right? They already look really, really solid together. That trio of Bluger, Heinen, and Kiefer Sherwood. But again, specifically the way they're scoring those goals, they're making plays in the offensive zone. I kind of caught myself on the show yesterday saying, I think Teddy Bluger's maybe found a bit of a new offensive level. And I was like, well, maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself. And then 20 seconds in, he makes this really aggressive, high-level pass, you know, passing up a very open shot, but he makes this really, you know, creative, aggressive pass to Danton Heinen to set up the opening goal. There's a level of playmaking up and down this lineup that did not exist last year, right? You're replacing a lot of Ilya Mikheyev and Sam Lafferty minutes. Ilya Mikheyev played the fifth most 5-on-5 minutes for forwards on this team last year, right? You're replacing a lot of Ilya Mikheyev and Sam Lafferty minutes with guys like Jake DeBrusque, Danton Heinen, even Kiefer Sherwood, who has a little bit of that playmaking potential. He participated in that nice tic-tac-toe goal last night as well. And then all of a sudden you look and you got Pugh Suter, a guy who was giving you really solid minutes on the first line last year. Now he's on your fourth line. When Dakota Joshua comes back, one of those guys I just mentioned, right? It could be Danton Heinen. It could be Kiefer Sherwood. Maybe it's Nils Höglander, but somebody who's been really good and is capable of making pretty high-level offensive plays is going to end up on the fourth line alongside Pugh Suter when this team is healthy. And that's before we get into any potential additions they could make before the deadline. So already, the forward depth, the idea of we need to improve the personnel at forward, not bring in guys who are all flash and no substance. You know, Daniel Sprong's still a work in progress there. We'll see if he gets into the lineup more consistently. But bring in guys like Sherwood, like DeBrusque, like Heinen, who can fit with our identity, with our defense, what we want to do defensively, but also bring a higher level of playmaking, a higher level of offensive ability than some of the guys who were getting minutes last year. You're seeing that work already. It's allowed Connor Garland and Nils Höglander to move up to the top six. They look very dangerous, and the third line is still capable of scoring. The fourth line with Pugh Suter, still capable of being dangerous offensively as well. So that's a big check mark for the Canucks as they try to build their new identity. Now, this isn't necessarily a new part of the identity, but if I was just to ask you, okay, through 6 games, describe the Canucks' identity to me. Well, one of the first things that's coming up is just Quinn Hughes. It's not much more complicated than that, right? And there are limitations to how much you can rely on one player. Drance and I have talked about it. I know he was mentioning in his latest piece at The Athletic as well, the on-off numbers for Quinn Hughes are just eye-popping. The Canucks are so good and so in control when he's on the ice, and they're really having trouble capturing or getting close to that level when he's off the ice. There are limitations, but it's also not an insult, really, to say that a big part of the Canucks' identity is simply Quinn Hughes. It's as simple as that. I mean, what's Edmonton's identity? It's Connor McDavid. There's other elements too, right? But in large part, it's Connor McDavid. What's Colorado's identity? It's Nathan MacKinnon. That's what happens when you are a superstar level player. You become, in and of yourself, just the fact of your existence, becomes a major part of a team's identity. And that's what we're seeing with Quinn Hughes. He gave the quote to IMAC last night that he thinks his mentality has gone to a higher level alongside his game from his Norris Trophy level last year. Rick Tockett's dropping Sidney Crosby comps, talking about Quinn Hughes' work ethic and his mentality. And if you've listened to Rick Tockett, you know how seriously you should take that. He's not throwing out Sidney Crosby comps loosey-goosey at the drop of a hat. That means something when you get that comp from Rick Tockett. And that's the air that Quinn Hughes has put himself in right now. He is dominating every time he jumps over the boards for the Canucks, and he's really, you can see him shouldering the burden for the Canucks. I put this out on Twitter. Quinn Hughes, we know he wanted to be more aggressive with his shot, right? He always wants to take those next steps as a goal scorer. Twice as many shot attempts almost as the next closest Canucks. He has 57 shot attempts through six games. It's almost 10 a game. The next closest Canucks are Brock Besser and Connor Garland with 29 each. So Quinn Hughes doubling up what other guys are doing on the team in terms of shot attempts through six games. And really, I think with Quinn Hughes, I kind of think we're past the, you know, is he the best defenseman in the league conversation? Look, Cale Makar's off to an incredible offensive start. I understand that. But if you dig down a little bit and look at some of the play driving numbers for Cale Makar, they weren't that pretty last year. A bit of a trend continuing over this year where he's relying a lot more on Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen to drive play, and he's the beneficiary of playing with them, rather than Cale Makar doing the heavy lifting. And for Quinn Hughes' case, it's the complete reverse. He is doing the heavy lifting. So look, I don't want to completely say that argument's over. Obviously, it's not. Cale Makar, Conn Smythe Trophy winner. We all know what he's capable of. He's a phenomenal defenseman. I'm not going to say that that's an open and shut case at this point. But I do think the more interesting discussion now is, where does Quinn Hughes rank, not just against other defensemen? Where does he rank overall in the league? You do the old, okay, you have one must-win game coming up. You get to pick any player across the NHL. How many guys are you taking, no doubt, before Quinn Hughes? Connor McDavid, for sure. I'll throw Nathan MacKinnon in there for sure. I'm probably taking Austin Matthews, probably Nikita Kucherov. That might be it, though. Like, get to the next consensus top five forward, Leon Draisaitl. I love Leon Draisaitl. Phenomenal player. I think I might take Quinn Hughes over him if I'm picking guys for one must-win game. Cale Makar, I think I'm taking Quinn Hughes right now. The difference we're seeing from when he's on the ice to when he's off the ice, that's what McDavid does. That's what MacKinnon does. The way he takes over a game, that's what Nikita Kucherov does. Those are his peers in the NHL right now. Now, maybe he's still in that conversation with Cale Makar, but he's clearly graduated and moved ahead of the, you know, Miro Heiskanen, Adam Fox, that next tier defenseman, Roman Josi. Those aren't his competitors right now. It's the guys up the list of forward. It's the, I don't want to put McDavid. McDavid's, we all know, he's the best player. But it's that next group of guys. It's MacKinnon, it's Kucherov, it's Matthews, it's Draisaitl. And you know what those guys are? They're Hart Trophy candidates. And that's what Quinn Hughes is playing like right now. He is playing like a legitimate Hart Trophy candidate for the Vancouver Canucks. So two big parts of the team's identity, the good parts of the team's identity in the early going, the forward depth and Quinn Hughes. You know what another one is? Is goaltending. And it's not happening in the way we might have expected. It's Kevin Lankinen. It's not Thatcher Demko. We still have no idea when Thatcher Demko is going to suit up for the Canucks. And it hasn't even been Artur Shelov's, who was kind of the presumptive 1A coming into the season, even after they signed Lankinen, certainly before they signed Kevin Lankinen. So it's a bit unorthodox, maybe a bit unexpected how they're getting here, but once again, the Canucks are getting excellent goaltending. And we always knew they needed to add more elements on top of that part of their identity. We saw them do that last year, but it's still a great ace to have up your sleeve. Who knows how long Kevin Lankinen can keep it going, but he's been a big part of this quick turnaround for the Canucks. And again, he's helping them maintain that part of their identity. That even when they do have those defensive lapses, they've got that goaltending, that really solid goaltending back there to take care of some of them. Gives up three goals last night, but again, he was really, really good against the Chicago Blackhawks. So those are kind of the three elements of the identity, which are very clear to me right now. and that you have at least a little bit of confidence, maybe not in the Kevin Lankinen one, but when Thatcher Demko gets healthy, in continuing. What are some of the things that are still a work in progress for the Canucks? I think it's fair to say that fully recapturing and reestablishing the defensive side of their identity from last year, I think it's fair to say that's still a work in progress. The defensive numbers show them about average right now. You know, whether it's shot attempts, shots, scoring chances, expected goals, kind of middle of the league. Not terrible by any means. I think the individual breakdowns have maybe made it look a little worse than the numbers read out. But of course, last year they were way better than average. And as much as we can talk about forward depth and the offensive talent, the playmaking capability they've added to the lineup, this is still a team that is going to need to be excellent defensively for them to be Stanley Cup contenders. Now, this is probably the one that concerns me the least. If there's one thing we should have a lot of confidence in a Rick Tocchet coach team doing, it's being really good defensively. They have the personnel to do it. He keeps saying, we got to protect the guts of the ice better. Again, when Rick Tocchet turns his full attention to improving something on the hockey team, usually it gets better. Eventually, they are going to rediscover, if not the very peak of what they were doing defensively last year, they're going to be a very good defensive team at some point this season. I have a lot of confidence in that. Other things that they're still trying to figure out in the early going here. Attacking off the rush. Yeah, they look more dangerously. Look more dangerous offensively, but it hasn't really been because of the rush. It's a lot of what they're doing is play when they're already established in the offensive zone. We talked so much about how they could get more dangerous off the rush in the preseason. Haven't seen that materialize. There's been moments where you can see, okay, they're trying to get that defenseman up to create those odd man rushes, trying to have more speed through the neutral zone, getting guys flying out of the zone a little bit earlier to try to stretch the defense, but it hasn't come together to be a consistent part of how they're creating scoring chances. That's something that we got to keep monitoring because, again, I think to really put it all together as a high-level Stanley Cup contender, they're going to have to find that element of their game at some point. And, you know, the attacking off the rush, of course, obviously tied to the bottom four defensemen, especially the Soucy-Myers pairing, which is struggling so far. I had high expectations for Soucy coming into this season. He's struggled. There's no doubt about it. I got to say, it feels like it's only a matter of time. I know we're still here in October, but they did the Nikita Zadorov trade in November last year. Do we get to the new year without them making a move on the blue line? We'll see. It's such a clear area of need right now. That little extra bit of puck moving from the bottom four guys. They're going to give Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers more of a chance to figure it out here, but at a certain point, they are going to have to make a move. So that's kind of where things stand as I see it, as the Canucks are trying to build this new identity to start this season, right? Forward depth shown out. Quinn Hughes has been excellent. The goaltending's been really solid. Still trying to work on that defensive identity. Still trying to find that higher level of attacking off the rush, and still the questions we had coming into the season about the bottom four of the defense. Now, one obvious thing missing from there that has been a huge part of this team's identity, certainly was last year, is the play of their star forwards. I was talking about their forward depth, but we also know this team is carried by JT Miller and, when he's on, Elias Pettersson. JT Miller scores again, sets up a beautiful power play goal to Brock Besser. His production is there. I still don't think the play driving has been fully there for JT Miller, but he's getting his points. We know he's battling through something. No concerns long term for JT Miller for me. Which brings us to the mandatory on Canucks Talk, Elias Pettersson check-in. And I got to say, I'm less and less concerned with Elias Pettersson right now. Three straight games of him making plays, him attacking, him being creative, him being decisive, being confident, all of those things, right? Draws the penalty by trying to deke past a guy and get to the inside. Had another, you know, set up Filip Hronek right in the slot at one point with a nice play. Showing that element of creativity, which is such an important part of his game. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying there's nothing he can do better at this point. Of course he can improve. The points have to come at a high level at some point for Elias Pettersson. He's paid to produce. But this is starting to feel much more like a typical he's fine and the points will come slump than whatever it was we saw last year. Maybe it's not all the way there yet, but it is certainly feeling a lot more like a normal, not really that concerning slump that even the best players have. I'm more and more convinced that we're going to see a true Elias Pettersson breakout, that some of these chances he's getting, that some of these chances he's setting up are going to start finding the net more consistently, and all of a sudden he's going to be putting up points again. Still room to grow, but very much trending in the right direction for Elias Pettersson. All right, those are your headlines, and you can text in 650-650. What have you liked about the Canucks' identity so far? What are they still working on? How successful have they been at building this new identity so far through the first game, six games? Again, hit me up, 650-650. Lineup notes for the whiteboard. Canucks practicing today at 1 o'clock. Interesting. I thought they might get the day off coming back from Chicago, but they will practice at 1 o'clock today at Rogers Arena. They don't play again until Saturday, so they've got a few days here to, you know, I'm sure they'll get a day off at some point. They can get at practice. They can try to kind of fine-tune some of the things that Rick Tocchet has been talking about. They play the Penguins on Saturday, by the way, back at Rogers Arena. Probably, you know, we're always interested in Dakota Joshua's progress, JT Miller's status, although he played last night, so you got to think he's going to be fine for Saturday. Obviously, if we see Thatcher Demko, those are all top of mind. The other one is, when will Derek Forbort rejoin this team? And the follow-up question to that is, what do you do if Erik Brännström at that point? You know, Brännström's been a pretty pleasant surprise through his three games in the lineup. Obviously, the Florida one you kind of take out of the mix because he was just thrown in there without even having practiced with the team. But the last couple of games, his puck moving, his speed, his ability to skate with the puck, it stands out so much compared to the Soucy, Myers, Desharnais, Noah Juulsen group of players on the blue line for the Canucks. I don't know how you solve, okay, Derek Forbort's coming back. Do you go with four lefties and two righties? Rick Tocchet hasn't really liked doing that in his time with the Canucks. I don't think there's another lefty that you're taking out of the lineup, so I don't know what you do, but I think Brännström coming in has really highlighted how much different he is as a player and just what that element can do for the team, and I think they're really going to miss it if he leaves the lineup. Probably does. Right, Derek Forbort, you signed him in the offseason. You're going to put him back in. You probably want to go three righties, three lefties. But I like what I've seen from Erik Brännström. I think the effort's been there. And then obviously brings just a completely different dynamic than the Canucks' other depth defensemen. So that's a question I'm going to be watching. Is Derek Forbort back with the team? And what does that mean for Erik Brännström? The Daniel Sprong situation is one to monitor, too. Not in the lineup last night. And look, it's not as if they lack dynamic offensive players at this point, so I can kind of understand it, but the upside is there with this guy. It's very early. They're still working through the progress. They know he's a project. Curious to see if Daniel Sprong can find his way back into the lineup as well. Playoff update still per Dom Lucision's model at The Athletic. 95% chance to make the playoffs, and they are neck and neck with the Oilers in the Pacific Division projections right now. Both teams projected to finish with 106 points at the end of the year. That's 10 points ahead of Vegas's projection in third place. And I know Vegas off to a strong start in the standings, but if you actually look at the underlying numbers, some early red flags. Only a few games in, so nothing to get too concerned about for Vegas, but some red flags in the underlying numbers for the Vegas Golden Knights, and Dom projecting it to be a two-team race at the top of the Pacific Division between the Oilers and the Canucks. That's the whiteboard for today. As mentioned, you can send your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jason Bukala, our Wednesday regular, and of course, a former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He joins me next right here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.